Takia. Shevarim. Takia.
Thank you for downloading the Kol Hadash podcast. This is episode 25, originally recorded live on September 29th, 2011. Dignity is found in courage, yet there is no courage without risk. In part two of the High Holiday Focus on Truth, Rabbi Shalom discusses the struggle to live as we believe and having the courage to change our routines and rituals.
In Shushan, the capital of Persia, Hadassah faces a crisis. She has become queen without telling the king that she is Jewish. And now the Jews of Persia face death if she does nothing. When her uncle Mordecai asks for her help, she tells Mordecai that if anyone goes to the king without being sent for, they may well die. And Mordecai responds, "Do not imagine that you of all the Jews will escape with your life by being in the king's palace. Who knows? Perhaps you have attained to royal position for just such a crisis. The stakes are high for personal integrity, knowing who you are and living who you are." This Rosh Hashanah morning, I want to speak to you about true actions, our next exploration of living truth. The Book of Esther, Hadassah's other name, is one of the five scrolls near the end of the Hebrew Bible I mentioned last evening. But the irony today is that the scroll of Esther is not true action. The events in the story did not really happen. In reality, the kings of Persia chose their brides from select royal families, not by holding a beauty contest. The Esther story is told and retold every year, and every year Esther stands up for who she is, identifies with her people, and Haman fails yet again. There is a deep Jewish tradition of integrity, standing up for who you really are, the value of living your truth in deed as well as in word. This is a Jewish tradition we take very seriously, so seriously, in fact, that we are willing to bend other Jewish traditions to honor this one. Try making the women of Kol Hadash sit in the back of the room. Gender segregation is a Jewish tradition, but it is also a violation of our values of human dignity. In the past few years, a few bus lines in Israel have begun to run segregated buses with women in the back. Now, after a court order, a number of liberal Jewish women were empowered by the court to sit wherever they wanted on the bus. And so they channeled Rosa Parks, and they went into the buses, and they sat wherever they wanted to. And some of them were hassled, and some of them were ignored, and some of them were quietly thanked by even the observant women on the bus, who were glad that someone was standing up for their right to sit wherever they wanted to. The truth is that there are high stakes when values conflict. It's very rare you have 100% of a victory. Something has to give. Now, for our money, compromising our dignity for popular acceptance is not worth it. Many decades ago, a young couple came back from university in love, ready to be married. The bride-to-be was Jewish, and the groom was not. They went to meet with their family rabbi about holding their wedding in the beautiful synagogue where she grew up, and he berated her for her choice. He asked the groom, who was not Jewish, to promise at the wedding that he would convert, even if he had no intention of doing so. This couple, to their credit, refused to pretend. And the father of the bride went back separately to meet with the rabbi to try and work something out. In the end, there was no success. Now, unfortunately, this story is not an unusual story. But the next part of the story is, because the bride's parents quit that congregation. They said, if you won't celebrate our daughter's love with this wonderful young man, then you are not the place for us, and we will go somewhere that is. In the year 2000, the American Jewish Committee took its annual opinion survey of American Jews, and it asked this question. Rabbinic officiation at a mixed marriage, that is, a marriage between a Jew and a Gentile, is a controversial issue in American Jewish life. Which of the following positions comes closest to your view about the matter? First, rabbis should refuse to officiate at any marriage between a Jew and a Gentile. Second, rabbis should officiate at a marriage between a Jew and a Gentile only if no Gentile clergyman is involved in the ceremony. And three, rabbis should officiate at a marriage between a Jew and a Gentile even if a Gentile clergyman is involved in the ceremony. And of course, not sure. Now the results, striking. Rabbis should refuse to officiate at intermarriage, 22%. Rabbis should officiate only if no Gentile clergyman is there, 16%. Rabbis should even co-officiate with a Gentile clergyman, 57%. And not sure, 5%. Now note that when you combine officiate without the Gentile clergyman and officiate with them, you get almost 75% that say rabbis should officiate by themselves at an intermarriage. And a clear majority support co-officiation. Now, we are not surprised by these numbers. But evidently, the American Jewish Committee was very surprised by these numbers because they never asked that question again. They do a survey every year, and they haven't asked that question. Now, think about the split between the laity and the leadership. Orthodox and conservative rabbis are strictly prohibited from officiating at intermarriages. And estimates are that about half of Reform rabbis will also not perform them. Queen Esther would have had a very hard time finding someone to marry her, even to the Persian king. Chelsea Clinton found someone, but he was not her groom's congregational rabbi because he was raised conservative. Jewish leaders today are nowhere near where the people are, but the people are not living what they believe. Until people vote with their feet, live out in action what they truly believe, join congregations that serve who they really are, then nothing will change at the top. What happened to that nice young couple whose parents left their synagogue? They found a humanistic rabbi named Daniel Friedman who met their needs, and ultimately he became their family rabbi for many years. That young couple joined his humanistic congregation and not where they grew up, because that was who they really were. Why do people join humanistic Jewish congregations? They do not join us for the fancy building. They do not join us for public approval. They do not join us for the convenient carpool. We have members ranging from Naperville and Chicago and Evanston to Libertyville and even Milwaukee, and our out-of-state members too. They join us because of their commitment, because of our commitment to true actions. I hear again and again, I just didn't feel honest saying words and performing rituals I didn't believe. Or to put it positively, we say and we do what we believe. Fancy words like dignity and integrity really stand for the deeper truth of personal honesty, the satisfaction of living the truth that we are what we do. Last night I spoke about true words, the importance of saying what we believe. But words are not the only way to communicate. People who speak with their hands as much as we know that. We communicate, I love you, many more times through our actions than we say it out loud. A touch, a gift, a favor, a special smile, each partnership has its own vocabulary. And people who say they love you but do not act like they love you are clearly not to be believed. Sometimes it's easier to say what we want to do than to actually do it. But we know deep down that only saying it doesn't mean very much. If we fail to put our behavior where our mouth is, what's the point? I asked you last night to consider some part of your life where you talk the talk better than you walk the walk. If you could fix one part of your life in that respect, don't tell me. Don't tell anyone else. Do it. Disguise and revelation, true and false action are keys to the story of Esther. The very name, Esther, sounds like the Hebrew seter, which means secret. And the revelation of Esther's true identity saves her people. In later generations, the tradition of wearing masks and costumes on Purim became a kind of Jewish carnival, a freewheeling reenactment of the Esther story as a secret way to mock the powerful, even the rabbi. We can ask whether wearing a mask reveals as much as it conceals. Why choose that character to hide behind? Vashti, the king's first wife, refuses his inappropriate drunken request to parade herself, and she is kicked out for resisting his husbandly authority. She was rejected as a heroine by past generations, but celebrated today for the same reason. What else can we see more clearly if one small part of you is hidden? If your face is covered, your hands are even more expressive. Are you freer to be your true self if you imagine yourself unseen? If you are convinced that your ancestors, your parents, are still watching you, you might well look over your shoulder to do what they would have wanted you to do. Knowing that you are not on stage for past generations, knowing that you are the author of your own script, that gives you the freedom to be who you are and the freedom to become whom you wish. Actions reflect what we believe, whether we want them to or not. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur were traditionally seen as days of judgment, Yamim Noraim, the terrible days. In the land of Israel, they came before the rainy season, when life and death were truly in the balance. So it was decreed that you must come to synagogue. You must beg for forgiveness. You must starve yourself, even wear your burial clothes, to show how sorry and how pitiable you are. You must seek atonement for your transgressions, both individual and collective. You must rededicate yourself to the straight and narrow path so that you might be written for one more year in the book of life. Humanistic Judaism seems to take a much easier approach. Think about the past year, make better choices going forward, say you're sorry, be nice. Have we gone from fire and brimstone to milk and cookies? It does me no good to thunder at you. For one, I claim no perfection on my side. Too many of you know me too well for me to get away with it. But that kind of cosmic judgment of absolute guilt or innocence seems contradictory to a humanistic Judaism where truth is built out of a consensus of individual perspectives. I do want to celebrate, but also to challenge us. I want us to recognize how we are already living our truth through our actions, and also to inspire us to do even better. Is there a ritual practice of humanistic Judaism? Our principle of ritual behavior is summed up in how I explain to wedding couples why I personally do not wear a yarmulke or kippah on my head for ceremonies. I explain that this particular Jewish symbol does not have meaning to me. It's not part of my personal practice on regular days or on special days, in synagogue or at home or even at funerals. The original meaning of the kippah is showing devotion to a god, and that is how the kippah is commonly understood by many, particularly when the rabbi wears it. And I don't want to misrepresent myself. I do not personally need to wear a yarmulke to feel fully and authentically Jewish in who I am and in how I live. The yarmulke is not part of my family tradition. My father only wears one visiting his family's Orthodox synagogue, never in his own humanistic congregation. And on my mother's side, my great-grandfather was the generation to uncover his head. I fully understand that for some, the religious meaning of the yarmulke is relevant and important, and for others, its cultural symbolism or personal memory has resonance for them. So I put it very simply. Everyone is in charge of their own head. If the bride wants to wear a veil, she can wear a veil. If she chooses not to wear a veil, she is in charge of her own head. The groom can wear a kippah or not, the family can or not. Everyone is in charge of their own head, and that means me too. You might not believe it, But on more than one occasion, I've had discussions with a bride or a groom's parents who insist that I wear a yarmulke, even though the couple was fine when I told them this in advance. But my head is my head. In the end, even if other people have an opinion about what I wear or do not wear, everyone is in charge of their own head. Today, some Jewish women have chosen to wear kippot to connect with their family tradition. As they say, God bless them. Or as I say, Geh gesunter heit, go in good health, live your life. In the spirit of true actions, it's worth considering, why do I wear this when I do, or why do I choose not to? Everyone is in charge of their own head. We make our own standards for personal meaning, but we do encourage each other here to consider why we choose what we do. Is it simply tradition for tradition's sake, keeping what's old because it's old? Can we find new meanings for symbolic actions that speak to us? Breaking the glass at a wedding is a symbol of a new step forward, no longer scaring away evil spirits or recalling the destruction of the Jerusalem temple. Fasting on Yom Kippur as solidarity with the hungry or with the Jewish people or as a self-purification, no longer fasting as atonement for sins. Are some traditional actions and rituals simply too deeply connected with traditional beliefs and meanings, so we might feel more honest choosing to act differently? Must we get so drunk on Purim that we cannot tell the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai as prescribed by tradition, with all that we know of the dangers of alcoholism and substance abuse and binge drinking and drunk driving? I do not get to pass judgment on you for your choices of how to harmonize belief and action. You'll do enough of that for yourself. On some level, these seem to be relatively easy questions. We are not under pain of death or threat of genocide like Esther. There are generally no major interpersonal or ethical consequences to wearing or not wearing a yarmulke or fasting or not fasting on Yom Kippur. Living out our beliefs through our actions should have a much more definite impact on the world around us, and here I am talking about personal choices of what to wear or whether or not to eat one day a year. I heard recently that a number of snowbirds who fly down to Florida come down early for the high holidays. And they go to local synagogues and say, well, I'm a member of our synagogue back in New Jersey. Can I get tickets for the holidays? And so they got the tickets until those congregations in Florida called the synagogues in New Jersey. And they found, in fact, these people were not members back home. And so that begs the question, what good does it do to lie to get into high holiday services? This is the big picture, you see. This is why these questions are important. If we can live what we believe on the easy things, the personal things, that gives us the moral practice for making the harder decisions. Our choices here speak to our definition of ourselves. If we can face the questions of others with the courage of our convictions, living our values in our Jewish lives, then we can do the same every day, everywhere. How you are Jewish is emblematic of how you are human. If we take the harder path of integrity in our own Judaism, we will be better able to take the harder path of integrity in our business and in our relationships because of who we think we are. It would be far easier for me to work as a rabbi in a yarmulke than to be a rabbi without one. I would blend in much better with other rabbis, both men and women. That's what people expect from a rabbi. It's what the mothers want to see in the wedding pictures. And what's the big deal anyway? But easy is rarely synonymous with integrity. It became very clear to me very early that if I were to run my life by the standards of other people, it would not be my life. It would be their life. Everyone is in charge of their own head. Everyone can choose their own Judaism. So can I, and so can you. You are living your life, not mine, and not theirs. Only you can know if your actions match your beliefs, if you value by what you do what you say you value. I do know that by being here today, you have taken an important step in the right direction. You are here and not somewhere else, and you are here and not nowhere. Why do people join humanistic congregations? Why take the harder road? Some wonder what the truth has to do with being Jewish anyways. Who looks for real truth in Rosh Hashanah? We do. What does truth have to do with it? Everything. Not a complicated truth, a simple truth. We are responsible for our lives. No other person, no other being can live for us. And what better life is there than the examined life, the considered life, the life of integrity? Holidays and every day, New Year's and all year, here and everywhere. A little over a week from now, we will come together again on Yom Kippur evening. The days between now and Kol Nidre are space and time to think. Yom Kippur evening, we explore another side of truth, the side that faces outward instead of in, true relationships. We must be true to ourselves to be true to others. So think about how to be truer to yourself in what you say and what you do as the first step to being truer to those people you value. We know how the Esther story ends. She reveals who she is. The king permits the Jews to fight back against their enemies. Haman and his sons are hanged, and the Jews win. The day of doom decreed by Haman changes from a day of fear and grief to a day of joy and celebration. It is written in the Mishnah that the people of Israel had no greater days of joy than the Day of Atonement and the 15th of Av. The 15th of Av was a fertility festival the Jewish people has long since forgotten. But why was Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, joyful? In another rabbinic phrase, a Yom Kippurim, a day like Purim. Because the people believed that on Yom Kippur, their atonement had worked. Their behavior had been corrected. The evil decree had been annulled for one more year. They would live and not die because now they were on the right path. That is a source of joy. A season of judgment, even a season of self-judgment, need not be a time of doom and gloom. When I was in school, I loved taking tests. I did well. And who doesn't like doing well and being recognized for doing well? How do you succeed unless you find out what you do well and on what you can do better? Testing the truth of our actions to our words can be a day of great joy. When we see that we have lived true to our words, we can know that we have indeed forged lives of integrity. Lu Yehi, may it be. And Shana Tova.
That was Rabbi Adam Shalom of Kol Hadash Humanistic Congregation. More information about Kol Hadash, Rabbi Shalom, and Humanistic Judaism can be found on our website, kolhadash.com, kolhadash.com. This podcast was recorded and produced by Ken Burke on behalf of Rabbi Shalom and Kol Hadash in conjunction with Repatriation Studios. The shofars were blown by Kol Hadash members Stephen and Jim Jacobs. I'm Ken Burke, and thank you for listening.